Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
What's up, Willie Bum Bum?
Hey, Zach.
It's good to have you back.
Yeah, man. Pumped to be here. Thanks.
Yes. Since the last time I did a show, you and I taught a course together, and it was good to spend time with you and get on the river and do some teaching. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, buddy.
So we're going to do a show today. We have an agenda. Let me put it up again. We have more adapters and then answer questions. And we have a lot of questions, so we're going to flow through them pretty fast. When I say more adapters, it's the adapters for the blowers. And I got Willie Bum Bum one. He has it there. Yeah, I'm going to make it bigger. And these are adapters that go on like DeWalt, Ryobi, Makita, things that you can put into the raft, and it pushes open the nozzle, pushes open the little thing you have to twist. Yeah, you can see it pushes it through. And what do you think? What do you think, Willie Bum Bum?
Yeah, I really like it. I would go as far as saying I love it. My DeWalt blower is really nice for doing the low pressure, high volume. Mm-hmm. You know, we top it off with the K pump and wonderful.
Sweet. And I just got a box of new ones. I was sold out of almost everything for a while. We just got a box of new ones. So they're again on the riverhardware.com website, where our motto is, if you want customer service, call NRS. You can see the logo on there. The other thing I just got today. Yeah, there's the logo on them too. They're made by I think the brother of somebody who watches the show who does 3D printing, who designed them, and I just help him sell them. And I love getting them in people's hands because they're sweet. The other thing I just got today, I ordered some of these Sterling ropes to sell on the website. This is 150 feet of 3/8-inch static. And I was selling before 200 feet of 7/16 static, which is 13 pounds. It's just a little smaller diameter, a little shorter rope. It's only 4.5 pounds and like pretty carryable in a dry bag, like not that bulky. So if you're doing like just paddle boating, cap boating, lightweight gear boats, this is a decent rescue rope. So there's that. They just showed up, so I was excited to bring them out. And with that, let's go into questions. We have a lot of questions, so we're going to power through these. How do I get questions back up? There we go. Okay, we have more bogus at 1850. They want review. All right. Willie Bum Bum. Remember last episode? We did a lot of video review of bogus.
Lots of bogus thunder talk.
Lots of bogus thunder talk. And for those of you that didn't watch last episode, while I get this up, Will, do you want to talk about bogus thunder, what it is, where it is, the issues?
Sure. Bogus Thunder is on the North Fork American on the Chamberlain Falls run. Chamberlain Falls is right there. North Fork American is flowing in towards Sacramento out of like North Lake Tahoe area. And it's like the quintessential kind of one of the first class fours that folks kayak. Definitely a little bit harder in a raft. And Bogus Thunder is, I don't know how to put it, it's a difficult rapid. It's one that is pretty much always scouted commercially. And it's tricky. You said it's your nemesis, right, Zach?
It's the rapid that's given me the single most problems. Like, I have a fairly clean record commercially across the board, but I've just struggled with this one. I thought about it more afterwards. I think I had one rap and two flips here. By far the most problems I've ever had in one rapid. That's probably only like, I've kayaked in a ton, but probably only like 8 commercial trips. 3 problems in one rapid. That's a lot. It's got my number. Let's play the video. I haven't watched this yet, so I don't know what's going to happen. The title is Sloppy Run of Bogus. Oh, this is just leftover from last week. All
right. Yeah, we watched this one last week
at Harvard.
All right, we're done with that then. Okay, cool. We're moving on. Sorry, I haven't even looked at questions yet, and my office helped me organize them. So this came in and it got thrown in. So we reviewed it. If you care, watch next week. Right. topic, White River. Have you done the White River, Will, south of Mount Hood?
Oh, it flows into the Deschutes. I have not.
It flows off the kind of southwest flank of Mount Hood. It is wild and scenic from its source all the way to where it meets the Deschutes, except for White River Falls. That little section is not wild and scenic. And there's two, like, 10-ish mile sections, maybe a little longer, that are awesome. Class 3-4, pretty continuous, bit of wood, the classic Oregon stuff. They're worth doing. They're a great run. So I'm planning a 2-day, 1-night ducky trip down the lower White River in a couple weeks. A couple questions. Where exactly in Tri Valley do you take out? Any particular place you'd recommend to camp on the river for a 1-night trip? So, I mean, I don't know the answers to questions. So I'm going to just go to Google and Google. So let's open up Google here. So I wrote a description of the White River. How do I pull this up? I'm going to share the screen. So I did do a description, so let's go find it and see what happens. So we'll Google White River Rafting. And just so everybody knows, like, I don't – everything I know I put in these descriptions, like, if it's not – I should have come up sooner. White River Rafting. All right, let's just go to Whitewater Guidebook. So, like, everything I know is here. If it's not on this website, I don't know it. And so, I don't just, if you ask me questions, you're like, what do you do here? I can't remember. I did this run once. There's two runs, I've done each of them once. I would do them again. Where even are they? But if you want to know things about rivers, I would come here. Oh, do they even exist? Should I pass them here, Will? Oh, there we go. White River. Two runs. White River. So this is the first one. Keeps middle of the White River crossing, 12 miles. I don't think there's a particular camp spot, but you'll find camping. And then the lower section is White River to Tie Valley. I think that pronounced it right. It's more of a desert. The other one is like high alpine. This has more of a desert feel. And I don't remember. It just says take out Ty Valley or Tig Valley or T Valley. That's all I know. Just, I think it's pretty obvious where you take out and you'll find camping. Okay. I'm going to move on, Will.
That sounds really fun.
It's a sweet run. I did it as two individual day trips. We supped it when we were supping a lot. So it's not that hard, but there's a decent amount of wood. And actually, there was a lot of river-wide wood, which it was above the surface like a foot. And on a sup, you could just like jump off and swim under it and get back on the sup. But kayaks had to actually portage. So in some ways, it was easier on a sup to get through some of the wood. Okay, next question. I have this link ready for this seat. Hey, I looked at this seat on Amazon and the bolt pattern is the same. You mean the same as the NRS seat, I'm guessing is what you mean. There are a couple others at that $75 price. There are a couple more on Amazon, but I did not look at the bolt patterns. Okay, so I'm going to bring this up. This is a seat you could buy. First of all, what do you think about the NRS seats, Will?
I mean, they're pretty good. They serve their purpose. I don't think they're extremely durable, but they probably get abused. And I believe I've also seen these exact seats on frames before. I do think they do fit.
Yeah. When they designed the patterns that we use now, they based it off tractor seats. And then NRS started selling theirs that have become the standard. And they, I break these all the time. I'm looking for a solution. Whoever sent this, I looked at this. I just bought one today on Amazon because I'm tired of my NRS seats breaking. And this, I think the NRS seat's like $100. This is 72. So I don't know. I bought one to check it out. It looks cool to me.
I think they're a little heavier and similar durability.
My guess, I'm sure they're heavier. They can't be much worse on durability. They've got to be better. We'll find out.
I don't think they drain.
Yeah, but it doesn't really matter.
You find out.
The drain hole is probably the key element of the NRS one, but like, is it a thing? Is it that important?
Might be able to melt a hole in it with some hot metal. I think it's kind of important.
I'd like to find the really good one that's really good and durable, that's better than the NRS one and cheaper, and then help sell it to people. Because I feel like NRS has a monopoly on raft seats, and they suck. So I'd rather find something better. I think they suck because I have to fix them all. It's really easy to properly thread the bolt holes in the bottom. And I have several where just the whole thing's delaminated and come apart. And when I went to warranty them with NRS a few years ago, we had a bunch of them at once, like new ones come apart. NRS just sent me a bunch of epoxy and said, just fix them, please.
Nice.
But it's not, I mean, I have the epoxy right here. I mean, they sent me a ton, way more than I need. Here's several boxes of this epoxy they sent me that I'm still sitting on. But they shouldn't break. They shouldn't come apart. All right, we got some comments. Oh, there we go. Same thing you said. Well, is it nice?
I think it's nice. Yeah.
Why? It's just like if you get splashed, you're rafting. You can sit in water.
Yep, you can.
All right. Cool. Next question. Oh, wait, back to this one. Also, I was thinking a good segment for every now and then would be raft hacks. I know you can find stuff on Mountain Buzz, but it might be cool if something was at Costco or someone hacked some idea that's topical now. I don't quite understand. Do you understand, Will, what this is about?
I don't know anything.
So I think he's suggesting we have a new section called Raft Hacks, which is similar to Mountain Buzz. I mean, Mountain Buzz is quite honestly the definitive source for information about rafting. So I just go to Mountain Buzz for everything if you want good knowledge. And then something was at Costco where someone hacked an idea. Yeah, I'm not sure what this even means. Okay, moving on. You have mentioned several times in past episodes about cat voters. I think it's cat voters having a bungee cord as a flip line or the like. Can you explain or maybe show an example of what you're talking about? It seems to me that having a bungee cord attached to a rower would be dangerous. Suppose I understand the dynamics. Thanks for your show. Thanks for all you do. Your show is sweet. That's super nice. Okay, so you want to try to answer this, and I'll go find the bungees.
I can try. I don't have experience with these flip lines personally. I don't really row cats a ton, but I have seen a flip line made out of tubular webbing that had bungee cord put down the inside of it. That essentially pulled it together, and then you could hook it up and stand up. It looks a lot like the cat ones. You know what I'm talking about, Zach?
I didn't hear you, but did I bring this out on the course that we did together or the other course?
I don't remember seeing it.
Okay. So what you do is they're bungees. They're this is actually webbing. Let me make this bigger. I'll put on both of us. This is actually like tubular webbing with just bungee cord in the middle. And it's just like a long bungee that you can carabine or tie onto two D-rings. So it's pretty solid against your boat when you're using it on a cat boat. But when you need to reflip it, you just grab the bungee and you just pull back and lean back and it flips it and it goes back to where it was. It's super ingenious. This is one Mad Catter, this guy Dave Nissen made these. This is one that he made that has like fancy little clips on it. And this is a high-end one right here. They're sweet. They're really sweet. And I put one on a student's boat a few weeks ago and Dave stopped making these. And I actually dropped off a prototype to a sewer this morning to make some of these because I keep getting asked about these. I don't have video. I do have video of it being used somewhere. I have a photo of it I have to find, but I'm not going to do right now. You could see how this could potentially be an entrapment, right? Like you have this like bungee against your boat.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
I mean, yeah.
Like it's you could potentially attract, but it's bungee to the side, so it's pretty tight. You don't have it like this, and you'll see cat boaters where they're hanging like this. Yeah, it's not ideal. You want it tight against the boat. on D rings kind of away from you, it's like all count, all stuff. It's a risk reward. Like, do you want to do a super quick reflip or have a chance to get caught in a bungee? I'm going to claim I'd rather have the super, super fast reflip and accept there's a bungee like this that, like, I might get caught in, but probably won't.
Not sure if I'm supposed to take the opposing argument or not.
No, but... No. You don't, because that's, you can just say yes, no, I don't know, I have no opinion. Don't purposely take the opposing opinion.
Well, I mean, generally speaking, a cat boat, a gear boat, there's tons of entrapment hazards, and you kind of need to be aware of those things when you launch on one of them, right?
Yeah. And you choose to put that on. You have to understand the risk reward. And like, man, do I have video here? There's that video from, watch the video from the wind race on private whitewater. And when you go to private whitewater, make sure you subscribe. He shows video of Greg flipping his cat in the wind race. And Greg's reflip is fast because he has these. You just jump on it. You don't have to point the end of your PFT. You just grab it, flip, and go. And so cat boaters that are running class five, they need a quick reflip. They need, like, if you're running hard dry water and you flip, you need to get that boat back over quick and get back in your seat. So if you're running class four or five, I'd say these are nice. You just have to understand the risk. And I think it's a risk I'm willing to take. Kind of like the lines at the end of the cat boats. They're talking about, like, on the ends of the tubes.
Tag lines or tassels.
Yeah, they put like 6-foot tag lines on. And you could maybe get tangled up on those. But the advantage of having something to grab when you're swimming, in my mind, greatly outweighs any risk of an entrapment from those tag lines. But you have to understand, you're taking a chance you might get caught in a 6-foot tag line 8 feet away from you. But the advantage is if you fall out, there's something to grab to pull yourself back to the boat. So it's just risk reward. And if you don't want to have anything on your boat that you might get tangled in, then you might go for a longer swim. So it depends on what you're running. Go back to the question. It seems to mean that having a bungee cord attached to a rower, it's not attached to the rower, it's attached to the boat. And I have a photo of somebody using one from the other day. I don't know where it is. And I'm going to make some and sell them on the River Hardware site because I think they're pretty cool for the right people. So, yeah. And, oh, Jay just sent us a link. How do I copy this link? Jay, unfortunately, it's hard to, I don't know. If you Google out there, Google Todd Freeport helm seat without cushion, you might find a really good one. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. Lots of questions. And Willie, let's say we lost Will for a minute. Do you ever raft Hollywood Gorge? If you're ever interested, I would like to tag along. I live just below the gorge and raft the lower river and other rivers in this area, but have not rafted the gorge yet. So I've never rafted the Tootle. I've never rafted Hollywood Gorge. I'd like to. But honestly, like, I probably won't call you because I don't know you. And I'm very hesitant to raft with people I don't know. Because when I'm at work and I'm a guide, I'm happy. That's what I do. But when I'm boating, I want people who are heads up, safe, have proper boat spacing, carry safety gear. Without knowing you, I don't know, like, if you do that. And so just having you tag along is, to me, feels like I'm at work. And if I go boating, I like to be with people I know. They're looking out for me, and I'm not like a guide all day. Sorry to be harsh about it, but that's in my brain. What do you think about that, Will? Am I being too harsh?
I don't think you're being too harsh. I think, you know, being real is a good trait.
Yeah, there's people I know. Real. Yeah, like, just people I know who want to step up. I'd love to take them out. Like, people I bow with, I understand their boating style. I'm like, hey, I want to step up and do this harder run. I'm like, yeah, I'll tag along and help you out. But if I don't know you at all, it's really hard to, you know, if I don't know, it's just, I want to be taken care of.
Where's the Tootle, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't know. I'll Google it. I'm guessing Washington somewhere.
Mm.
Your state. Tootle. I guess I could Google Hollywood Gorge. Rafting. I'll go Google. It's a cool setting name. Here we go. The Tootle. I'll pull it. Let me pull this up. So let's see. 3+4 looks beautiful. It looks like what state? Oh, near Silver Lake, Washington. It's running right now.
Five.
Yeah, look, it's running right now. It's a nice level, it looks like.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's class 3. Yeah. I've heard of it. I've just never been there. That's cool. That's beautiful.
You guys might be able to arrange a private clinic type situation.
I mean, I can't because we have to have permits. Like, I can't go work on federal public land because I'm a commercial outfitter. So I have to get permits and licensing and the whole thing. If it's private land and there's private access, land access that I'm allowed to use, I could, but I mean, it's so much work. Like, let's load up everything into our vehicles, drive 4 hours to do a river we've never done. It's just so hard. So hard. Okay, we're going to keep plugging through because I have a lot of questions. I'm a fan, a member of Gear Garage. Love it. It's awesome. I'm much appreciated. Thank you for being a member. Thanks for being a fan. Thanks for the nice words. I would like to know what solar panels and power banks Zach used on his recent grand trip and whether they were sufficient. I'm planning to use the far out map on my phone for a private grand trip launching May 4th. I need to keep my phone charged. You know, do I have it here? Okay, wait, hold on. Do you want to talk about solar panels while I try to find it?
Sure.
You've got to have an opinion as a Grand Canyon guide.
I hate electronics in the outdoors.
Even phones?
Yes.
Hold on, I'll be right back. I think I have the solar panel.
The best battery bank that I see on long multi-day trips is a deep cell battery. A nice deep cell battery could range from $100 to a few hundred bucks. And you can put that in an ammo can, charge it up before you leave home, and that thing will keep your phone charged. But, yeah.
All right,
Zach, I was just saying the best power banks that I've seen on long multi-days, yes, in Grand Canyon, are like marine deep cell batteries.
I think, yeah. No, I mean, getting a battery, just a big battery that just has a ton of charge, I think is the way to go. Dealing with a solar panel is a pain in the butt. Like, you have to have sun. It doesn't charge it that much. I mean, the one I have, they stopped making. But I think I found the one online here that let's see if it opens. I think that I'm looking right now. This similar. All right, let's go to Goal Zero. The one I have is a Goal Zero. It's one of these Nomad ones. Which one is it? It's like 3-panel. It's something like I don't know. Somebody on our trip had this one. It was basically useless. I had one a little bit bigger, more like this. And if I left it out for like 6 hours in hot sun, I would get like enough maybe charge for one iPhone charge. I don't know. So I think Goal Zero does a good job. These ones, the fold-up work. It's just a pain. It's the last thing you want to do. And that is get to camp and like be with your friends. Be like, hey, guys, wait a minute. I have to find this exact spot to point at the sun to set up my solar charger and plug in all the batteries. It's just annoying. So, yeah.
Go get a deep cell marine battery, charge that sucker all the way up, put it in an ammo can. You'll be everybody's electronic hero.
What's a deep cell marine battery?
Yeah, it's just like a really good car battery.
It's just a nice car battery.
It's like a nice car battery, yep.
Like something like this.
I guess. It looks, yeah. I'm not an electrician, you know, but.
You know, you brought up not having like electronics on trips. I'm in between because I like, you know, I have to take a GoPro and film things, and I like my phone for the far out maps, those that are on my phone. I also like a phone to take photos. In an emergency, mine has like the satellite emergency talking thing. And I'd like to have a phone. I think it's nice. But you don't bring a phone at all on trips?
I mean, I have a flip phone. I bring it on. Right. I bring it on a trip and it's my alarm clock. But I'm not on like my one private trip that I get to do every 5 years, you know, it's different. Yeah. So like I get it. Take photos, it's nice, but also put your phone away.
Yeah.
It's okay. Disconnect.
But do you know about those far out maps, Will?
No.
Far out. So I use mine on our Grand Canyon trip when I saw you, and it's an app that so Far Out is an app, and then our friends, our sponsors at GoRafting.com sell the maps that go with this app that's made for hiking and biking and stuff. And it's really cool because it's on your phone. It tells you where you're exactly at and how many miles to the next camp. And then has like really good camp descriptions and photos of the camps. And I think it's better than paper maps. It was amazing. So if you're going to use your Far Out app on your phone, you probably need to recharge your phone. I think that's what the person is asking about. So anyway, it's funny. Courtney just published this blog today on our website. And you see, she says, we don't recommend bringing solar panels to charge electronics. And she says the same thing, like just get a good external power bank. And this is for like our 4 to 6 day trips, of course. But imagine what you're saying about that. And then while we're on the topic, please don't bring drones on multi-day trips. Drones are not allowed on wilderness areas and most wilderness rivers. Like, please just don't bring drones while we're here. Okay, here we go. Tootle drains Mount St. Helens. Sweet. That's cool. Microvoltaic systems. There we go. Yep. Enjoy the silence. I'm with you on enjoy the silence. More and more people are rafting by me blasting music. Are you seeing that in the Grand too?
Private trips, yeah, for sure.
I mean, I like the silence too. I like to have my phone for a few things. But like, oh man, my pet peeve is people blasting music as they go by you. Like, if you're going to go by somebody, if you want to play music, I don't care that much. But if you're going to go by somebody, just turn it off or turn it down. If you go by somebody's camp, it's just rude to blast music in places like, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen some pretty ridiculous, had some pretty ridiculous experiences with what you're saying right now. We were sharing a camp that, you know, there's three camps down at 220. We were at the upper and there was a younger group down at the middle and they were like, they had like big speakers and they were bumping music to the point where I grabbed another one of our guides and we went down there and we're like, hey, could you turn it down? And trying to keep eye contact with a fully naked man asking him to turn down his music. It's difficult.
It's pretty messed up. And I've heard people come back at me and say, no, I'm allowed to do what I want. I need music. Like, it makes me feel good in the woods. And I'm like, oh, cool. Whatever. It just seems like you should be respectful of other people that don't want to hear your music. It just seems like that.
Right? I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. I have a pretty strong opinion about these inreaches and folks texting home and whatnot nowadays. Mm-hmm. And I'll try to keep it short, but the thing I tell people is that good news means nothing. And bad news can ruin your trip.
Your trip and other people's trip.
And other people's trip. Correct.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm personally with you on that. I don't text home. I don't text the office, even though maybe I should. Unless I just something we need to do, of course. But I'm respectful. If people need to do it, like whatever. As long as it's like for me, not in camp. Like when I've had people sitting in camp with their like little Garmin on their thing on their phone texting home while we're in a chair circle. Like in my opinion, if you're gonna do it in your tent away from everybody. Cause a lot of us want to just get away from that. But you're right, like good news doesn't matter. Bad news will change your mood in a special place and will your mood will affect other people. Okay. What power bank did you use? Probably not going to get, I mean, I like, okay. I think I know what my power bank is. Will, do you want to talk more about how people should text from the woods? I'll be right back.
Sandy, the Marine car-sized battery sounds ridiculous everyone else on your trip with electronics will be pumped if you put that together and figure out how to get everyone charging their phones and whatnot.
Okay, I found it. I found it all. Check it out. All right, so this is my solar panel that broke, kind of. It still works, but it just like, yeah, it's like, it's annoying. It's like kind of in pieces, a lot of work. It has four panels. The Nomad 28, it was fine. It was fine. I probably wouldn't do that again. I'd probably do, actually, if I did a grand trip now, I'd probably take what Will is saying, that car battery thing. The battery I had was this Sherpa 100 AC. I felt like I could never actually figure out how this all worked. I was always had to press like 8 buttons to make it work. But it's a good battery. Like, it did fine. It probably got like 10 days worth of stuff. So if I'm on a Middle Fork trip and I'm trying to get video, because that's what I do as a YouTuber, dude, this is good for charging GoPros on a 6-day trip. If I'm like only bringing my phone, I'll bring a tiny version of this. But if I'm doing like media stuff, this is a good size for 6 days. But I'm not the electronics guy. So like people probably know more than I do.
How much did that setup, that Goal Zero setup, cost you?
You know, I got this with a gift certificate I got for Christmas. So I can't remember, maybe like $100, $200. I think this battery is $300. And this is my second one. The first one broke. So they also break, which is annoying. It's kind of an expense. If I wasn't doing YouTube, I wouldn't own this at all. Like, this is an expense of the channel.
That deep cell is going to be cheaper, more reliable. It's heavy, but yeah.
Thanks, you guys. So get a battery that'll fit in an ammo can. It will. I didn't put this in an ammo can. I put this in a dry bag. It doesn't need to be in an ammo can. We don't need, like, the amount we use ammo cans is insane. Like, I think it's insane. They don't stay waterproof forever. They're like ancient technology. I threw both of these in my dry bag with my stuff. Or get a Pelican box or whatever, in my opinion. And I have no idea if it will be sufficient. It depends on the weather. It depends on how you charge it. It depends on a million factors. But if it's just your phone, you're charging, and you leave it in airplane mode, and you keep it warm. Warm is important. Like, keep it warm, and this warm. I bet just this would probably be enough for just your phone. But I don't know for sure. I'll use the in-reach to get flow updates if the weather's variable. Does it affect anything? You're still on the river. What are you going to do? Quit? The weather's going to happen. If the weather gets bad, what are you going to do? Stop? Like, you're still going. Weather and flow. Like, once you've launched, on the Illinois, I might want a flow update just for peace of mind a little bit if it's raining. But honestly, almost everywhere else, like, right, Will, it's not going to change. You're still going to go.
I can go on and on. I mean, I go on a surf trip to Baja, and we're in the middle of nowhere, and people are giving me the surf forecast. I'm like, dude, look at the ocean. if you're off grid for long enough, you can almost feel the change in nature, you know?
This happened 2 days ago. We were out in the Cal Salmon, and somebody asked me what the weather would be today. Should we text out to get the weather? And I literally said, like, I don't know, it looks sunny. Like, I just, like, I don't know. Like, and if it changes, or are we not going to go? It's not going to affect any decision we make, other than maybe we might put another layer under our dry suit, maybe. We're getting a little crotchety.
Yep. I mean, people have been doing this outdoorsy stuff forever without these in-reaches.
In-reaches, and I think this, I honestly, and even though they're a sponsor, beyond GoRafting.com being a sponsor, I honestly think that phone map is sweet. And that's a good reason to have a good charge. But maybe bring a paper map just in case your battery, because you could also lose your phone. When I was on that trip where I saw you in the middle of the night, my wife's phone fell in the river. And immediately she was like, oh, I lost all my photos, everything. And it was just a good rule of thumb. If you sleep on your boat, don't have your phone just next to you. Luckily, it was like this much water and I was able to grab it. But you could lose your phone pretty easily in the Grand. Tons of people lose their phone on Grand trips. Okay. Next question. We got to keep going. Can't upgrade my membership. Okay. I'm attempting to upgrade my membership. Okay. So people, just so followers, you can be a member, pay like $2, $5, or $10 a month. I appreciate it. It makes me feel cool. You don't have to, but it's appreciated. It helps me buy things for the show like these so I can keep making videos. So thank you. And you're asking how to upgrade from $1.99 to $4.99. I don't know. Like, thanks for asking. Don't worry about it. If you Google how to do it, I'm not technical support anymore. Yeah, we also have, if you want to support the show, we have a Patreon. Go to Patreon/ZCollier. That'd be cool. Yeah. Thank you for asking. I was a guide in the Illinois early 80s, Miwok 14 foot. That's hardcore. Bucket boat. Yeah, Miwok 14 foot bucket boat, paddle boats, and gear boat. And probably no in reaches or weather forecasts. Hope to get there with you all in the next few years. I'm 69 now in Rowan, Illinois. Maybe not. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, love seeing your videos of it. Heart. Oh, that's a heart emoji. Cool. And the great Greek garage of it. Thank you. Really appreciate. And yeah, I mean, if you want to support the channel financially, cool. If you don't, we're going to be fine. Like, but it helps me buy stuff that we can talk about and review. Okay. Looking to buy a new raft, trying to come in under 10K with frame and Sawyer oars. I like the thought of air being easier to repair, roll, and store. Sweet. I saw your review from March 2018. This was 5 years ago. 6 years ago. Just so you know, things have changed. I shouldn't do a new one. I've been doing Gear Garage that long.
You stated the air raft was least flippable. That's interesting.
It is least flippable. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. And Moravia rafts. You say the air raft is least flippable. I suspect that has to do with the regular floor pocket. What are your thoughts on putting sealed floor pocket in the boat? More maneuverable, but more likely to flip. Will the sealed floor be an advantage in low water on the middle fork? Great videos. Keep up the good work. Air rafts are least flippable, right?
I understand what you're saying.
Okay. Yep. The floor gets water in it. You're not saying yes or no. You're just saying, you literally just ignored my question. You just said, I understand what you're saying.
I think a bucket boat is least flippable if you want to get.
Okay. Correct. And an airboat is the least flippable self-bailer. We agree to that.
Currently manufactured self-bailer. Sure. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Man, you are really getting me on these technicalities. Okay. So an air, water gets in the floor, which makes the floor heavier. So the center of gravity is lower. And there's some sort of suction that happens between the floor and the water because there's water inside the floor. And you notice it's trying to flip it back over. If you try to flip up a rig, an air that's right side up, it's harder to get it off of the water. And you see like the guys running class 5+ or in the gorge, and they should be definitely flipping. And they're not. And I test that to a lot of them using airs. That's why I think that. The sealed floor, the water doesn't get in the bottom. I own one sealed floor boat, two non-sealed floor boats. I think I would only get the sealed floor for racing. I think that the water in the floor is actually a nice thing. I don't think it's more maneuverable, not that much. Would it be an advantage at low water? I have no idea. I mean, if you want to do well at low water in the middle fork, don't bring very much stuff and get good at rowing. We're talking like the sealed versus non-sealed is like a minor, like 5% difference. Like, I just bring less stuff. Like, leave your battery at home.
I think he's saying a sealed floor will be more maneuverable, which I would agree with. And then when he says, would it be an advantage? Will the sealed floor be an advantage in low water on the middle fork? In comparison to the floor that holds water, yes, the sealed floor, it'll be easier to slow your momentum in a low water situation.
That's true. I think it's minor. It's not that much water in the floors. We're talking maybe about like, it's probably a total of like 2 gallons, which is like 15 pounds. It's not that much water. Yeah. And maneuverability, you're saying just because it has the extra weight, it's less maneuverable.
So in my opinion, I have worked a little bit with these boats that have the water, the floor that takes on water. They keep their momentum really good. So like South Fork American, Middle Fork American in the flat water, phenomenal. And yes, they don't flip a lot. Also very good. But have you done the Truckee?
Yep.
Worked on the Truckee a little bit with the floors that have water in them. They are definitely, I don't like them for low water stuff. Got it. Sealed floor would probably be an advantage, in my opinion, in a low water environment.
That's real world experience. Thanks for sharing that. Again, my opinion is that it's just so close. I would just get the non-sealed. I wouldn't get the sealed floor. It's probably a little bit better, like Will's saying, for low water, but I don't know. It's a race. You're not buying the boat just for the middle fork. You're buying the boat to boat. So I personally think I would only get a non-sealed floor if I'm specifically racing or maybe just doing low water only, but yeah.
What are the advantages for racing? That's fascinating.
Well, there's weight in the floor, and so it makes the boat heavier, and that suction, like, harder to, if you want to go faster than the current, it's harder to get the boat faster than the current.
Mm.
So it's just, a sealed floor is definitely faster. And when I race, if I borrow an air to race, I'll put Terrate over the holes so it doesn't take on water. That's definitely faster. You can also do that, just like put Terrate over the holes when you want a sealed floor. Just cover them, and then you all of a sudden have a sealed floor.
Boom.
Sean, great. Thanks for the advice. Mike's talking about using the intermediate flow updates and weather. Yeah, I think it's peace of mind, like if you're stressed, for sure. And sometimes I'm on the Illinois and I'm just like, it looks like the river's coming up. Like, we're still going, but it's, you know, and I can't sleep at night thinking about it for 3 hours. I might sleep better if I just knew. So I get that. How often do you cancel middle fork sandwiches because of low water? Never. I signed up for your last trip of the year in late August. Awesome. Yeah, never. It's never too low. Okay, next question. Hi, Zach. Love the content. Headed out for middle fork salmon end of the month. Whoa, end of April? That's sweet. I'm guessing you're flying into Indian. I'm guessing. Okay, so first time for me, but going with a group that is experienced. Although they say we won't get out to scout anything, is that common? Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't hurt to scout a few things, but it's flow dependent for sure. But if you're starting at Indian, which I'm guessing you are, and you're experienced boaters, you should be able to read and run everything. Maybe scout Bernard or like Haystack. Maybe scout. It's flow dependent. I don't know. Just use good judgment. But yeah, that's fine. They said we both scout everything and they know it like the back of their hand. Yeah, you're good. I don't know your ability level, but yeah, I mean, that sounds reasonable. Try not to be inconvenient to the group, but are there any rapids I should insist we scout properly? If you're uncomfortable running a rapid without the beta and scouting, scout and be inconvenient. You're allowed to be that way. Like, put your safety first. If you're nervous, it doesn't matter what they think. Like, hey guys, I need to scout this. If they give you beta on earlier rapids and it's poor beta, it's poorly communicated or it's wrong, and it causes you to have a problem, you definitely should insist on scouting. Like, hey guys, you're not giving me good beta to properly run the river. But below Indian, I can't think of anything at like normalish flows that will probably be that I would necessarily scout. But if you feel like you need to, like, I don't know, do it. Pistol Creek at low water. Pistol Creek at most, a lot of water levels. I would scout that and Velvet, but he's probably going to put in it Indian, so he's going to miss Pistol Creek. If you're putting a boundary, I'd be like, yeah, maybe it's a good idea to scout Velvet. Maybe it's a good idea to scout Pistol, depending on the flows. Okay. Anything to add, Will? We still there, Will? I think Will froze. Okay. Scouring the web for current info on the middle fork salmon as an outfitter, do you have current beta on the log jams above Indian Creek? I did a video about this. Just search for my YouTube videos for Middle Fork Salmon beta. The answer is I don't have beta, and I probably won't have beta until the end of May. Like, nothing's going to change. We don't know what's going to happen until after the high water comes through, which is probably going to happen at the end of May. So I don't know. And I don't think I'm going to know anything until at the earliest end of May. Velvet is all new this year. Definitely scouting launching from Marsh Creek boundary. Yeah, I don't think they're launching from Marsh Creek. I don't think anybody's launching from Marsh Creek boundary in April. Maybe you are, but I doubt it. If you are launching from not Indian, you're going to want to do quite a bit of scouting, like a lot. But I'm guessing in April, people generally fly straight to Indian. So I would, I'm pretty confident end of April. It's really cold on the upper section too in April. If you're launching before the high water, you're probably flying to Indian. If you're launching at Marsh Creek or wherever, you should scout a lot, especially Marsh Creek to boundary and then a handful of places. All the log jams you should scout. All the big rapids you should scout. Anything you can't see, you should scout, because there's new wood that's shifting all the time. Yeah. Okay. So next question. Salt River snowpack is listed by the USDA as being 3,825% of median. I'm guessing the number is so high because the median on average is really low. That's probably true. Yeah. Any thoughts on how a river guide might behave in this kind of situation? A river might behave. I know every river will be different, but your thoughts on really high water events? Usually when it's 3,800% of normal, that means that day it's like 0.07 inches or what feet or whatever, 0.07 on median, and it just happens to be like 3, right? Like it's almost zero, and then a normal and like on average, and it's just that day happens to be like a number that's not ridiculous, like 3 inches. So it's just a mathematical thing usually. They don't have a actual 3,800% snowpack. That's 38 times the normal. That's 100 feet of snow or something. But your thoughts on really high water events? I don't think the salt's going to be high. I don't know. I don't check the Salt River snowpack. I've never done the Salt River. I don't think it's going to be really high. Well, do you want to answer the question, though? What are your thoughts on really high water events?
It's dangerous, right?
Yeah.
The Salt Rip, the Salt Wilderness trip's a great trip.
Yeah, I heard amazing. I heard somebody that just a few days ago say it's better than the Grand Canyon.
It's a good trip.
But high water is dangerous. You should maybe, if it's super high, I would focus more on the flow and not this like mathematical thing the USDA is saying. But yeah, high water is dangerous, and you should consider not going if it's high. If you do go to Thai, you should, you need to have like knowledge of the place, super experienced boaters, proper dress, proper equipment, understand you're taking a risk and like it's risky. So high water events, you should be at pause. And that's how a lot of fatalities happen, is high water events. Thoughts on really, really high water events should give you pause. Really high water events, you probably shouldn't go.
I think you mentioned 3,800% of median. It's just kind of like a statistical outlier, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like the median that day is like a 0.012 inch. Because it's on median, there's almost no snow typically that day. But there just happens to be 3 inches or something, which isn't that much either. It's just like mathematically, it just makes a really high number. I bet if we looked right now, it's probably like, it's just the snow's gone at zero. Like whenever it gets really close to that almost melting, it always has, it throws off crazy numbers like this. There's no way, like when we got this question last week, there's right now, it's not 3,825%. If anybody can look what it is online somewhere and comment, that'd be cool. Tapping might be worth a scout if it's low. Yeah, or high or medium. It's a great place to scout. I scout it all the time. Forecast is for 4. Yeah. Yeah. And then it's supposed to drop down to like 2 again. So, yeah. Okay, here we go. Dogs and overframe rafts. I can already tell you my answer. Don't bring your dog. Will, any thoughts?
I love dogs.
I love dogs too. Do you bring your dog?
I don't have a dog.
Yeah. I have two dogs. I would love to bring them. It's just a bad idea. They poop everywhere. Are you going to clean it up? What if they swim and die? What are you going to do? Are you going to evacuate them? Are you going to helicopter them out? What if they just run off? I have a friend whose dog on a Hawaii trip just ran off and they couldn't find him and he had to leave. Like, he was gone overnight, never found him. I was like, I guess we got to go, and left his dog on the Oahu in the desert. Luckily, another group did find him and he got his dog back. But what if your dog just runs off? What if your dog gets attacked by a bear? What if your dog gets hurt? Do you like, what if your dog breaks their leg? Are you going to evacuate the dog with a helicopter? Like, there's a lot of questions. So I already know there's a lot of, because people always ask me for commercial trips, can I bring my dog? And I'm like, no. Like, what if I pay you more? What if my dog's really good? My dog's really, really good. I'm like, no. Anyway, our aspirations are multi-day trips in class 1 to 3 water. I'm wondering what the general consensus is regarding dogs and boats. Can it be fun? Oh, it can be fun. Is it a pain in the ass? Yes, it's a pain in the ass. Is it dangerous? Your dog, it is. Dogs weren't designed to go rafting. Are dogs generally welcome on rivers? Sometimes people are cool with them. It's really annoying when I get to camp and there's dog poop there, though. Really annoying. Anything to add, Will?
I mean, I think it's probably dog dependent, and that is basically boils down to owner dependent. You know, if you've got a water dog that doesn't leave your side, it might be okay, and you take care of its poop, but it could probably turn into a huge pain in the ass really fast for everyone, for other people.
Yep. It'll be a pain in the ass for you for sure, but you're also causing problems for other people. That's a good point. I took our old dog Luna down to Illinois once. That was a mistake. She did fine, but it was way more stressful for me and not that fun. And she didn't enjoy it. I don't know. Next question. This past winter, I spent some of my time trying to get on with an outfitter. I have my woofer and have completed a swiftwater class. I have experience in repairing boats/gear. And I'm also confident in class 3 and 4 rivers. I applied to probably 15 different outfitters and heard back from 4. Of those 4, I got an interview with 2. I didn't get hired, but was invited on a training trip. I don't have my guide license and realize that it's an important thing, but I would have figured out at least one outfitter would need a swamper/helper person. Do you have any advice for trying to get hired? Will, this sounds like a question for you.
Yeah. Go on the training trip. You know, it's... You kind of, oftentimes an outfitter is going to want to know that you can blend in with their culture and you get along with their guides and their guides get along with you. And they're probably not going to hire you for multi-day stuff without you going on a training trip. With that being said, there's a fine line between doing a training trip and doing training trips all summer. So you kind of need to fit into the culture of a company, and the only way they really verify that is you coming and hanging out.
And you say you're confident in class 3 and 4 rivers. I've heard that before, and a lot of times it's not true. And so are you confident? Do you have experience guiding people in class 3 and 4 rivers, or do you survive class 3 and 4 rivers? Do you have the skill sets required to like have proper boat spacing, stay in order, pull people in your boat, set safety? Like, are you getting down class 3 and 4 rapids, or are you actually a class 3 and 4 boater? It's pretty vague. I'm confident in class 3 and 4 rivers.
I think this actually leads into a much larger conversation about standardizing training and guides in our country getting licensed, IRF licensing particularly. You can go to an outfitter, you know, if you earn a IRF grade 4 license, you can go to an outfitter and say, look, I have this license. And then Zach, as an outfitter, knows what that license means and knows the evaluation that you've been through, the skills and knowledge that you possess.
And just to follow up with that, with the IRF doesn't license people. They're not licenses. They're awards or certifications. Licensing is done by states. And so a state license is what you would get from a state that the outfitter usually has to do for you. And the IRF is like a just basically a statement of competence. Like you have, like you have a, you could pass as a level three guy. Could you standardization? I mean, honestly, like just from reading your this topic, you should probably go to a guide school. Like you probably think you're better than that. And so, and I'm also guessing from saying, using the term swamper, you're trying to work in Idaho on the Middle Fork maybe, or the main. I know guides who work 5 or 6 years doing day trips before they even think about applying for the Middle Fork or main. So you're maybe setting your sights too high. Like you have a lot to learn before you work those rivers, and go find a place, start at the bottom. That's what I did. Start at the bottom, do day trips, wash the van, sweep out the trucks, go above and beyond. Don't just like show up for work and leave. Like be useful, be invaluable for sure. But like, if you're trying to start on the Middle Fork, you're lucky you got an interview with two, honestly. I don't know where you're trying to start, but I'm kind of get that vibe from this note. And there's going to be some tough love. Like, I'm just going to tell you like stuff directly. The other thing I noticed as I read this, some of these are not complete sentences. And most of your sentences start with the word I. And there's a lot of I's in here. I spent, I have, I applied, I didn't, I don't, I would. Like, that's when I get emails from people looking for jobs and I see that, I'm pretty hesitant. Like, cause I feel like you're going to be a guide for personal reasons and you're not doing it to be a guide and like share places with people. That's just the vibe I get from reading this. Like when I read emails, I go, how many sentences begin with the word I? If it's more than half, I probably won't even respond. I'll respond quickly. So I would, when you do apply your initial email, make sure that only like one of your 10 sentences start with some I. Use complete sentences, use complete paragraphs, and apply like, I don't know, that would be my biggest advice. And then go work on the Deschutes for 2 seasons or in Oregon or go somewhere else. It's tough love. I'm sorry, it's like harsh, but like that's from my perspective what we see a lot. Anything to add, Will?
No, I agree wholeheartedly with everything you just said.
Yeah, I mean, I work with Will and he came and did a training trip with us to like get in with us and like see our schools, and we got to know him to see if he'd fit in. And that's, I mean, he swept the house sometimes and did the little detail things. That's what I'm watching. I'm here with Mark, who's like one of the best guides in the world. One of the in my opinion, the best raft instructor in the world. We just got done with the trip yesterday. This morning, he swept the back of my truck out. I didn't even ask him to. He just swept the back of my truck out, cleaned the inside, like got the vacuum out, cleaned the inside. Just that's like also what it takes. Like if you're like, I want to be the Middle Fork, it's awesome, and I have some experience, and you want to just show up and do the minimum, like that's not going to work with me for sure. But I think most people will notice, like when you do show up, like, you know, clean the sink, clean the bathroom, cook people food, be part of the team and go above and beyond. And that's exactly like Will. Like when I met you, I was like, this guy's not only legit, but like knows what has to get done and is willing. And is not above certain jobs. Like a lot of people apply now are like, oh yeah, I'm a guide. I don't do this thing, or I don't clean these things or whatever. Like, I don't know. That's harder for me.
You're making me blush.
That's what happened.
Somebody in a training, not a river training, years ago, early 20s, said, you know, you want to be the person that takes the garbage out at the end of the night.
Yep. When I took my job running Echo, the company that I got a job to run the company before I started Northwest, they hired me to run the company. And I worked with these guys who are my mentors and they're legends for 2 years in the office. Every single day, I was the first person there and the last person to leave. And like, I closed the door, shut the place down, got there early, got the heat on. Like, that's what it takes to get a job, in my opinion. And it's some of it's unpaid work. Like, and it's just some of it's just like being a good member of this like employment community and going above and beyond. And like, I know several guides who got amazing guide jobs because they knew how to, they clean the vans on their day off, or they they went above and beyond to just stoke everybody out. And that goes a long way.
Definitely. You know, if you're going to show up to a place, I don't say you need to have your tail between your legs, but, you know, tread lightly. I wouldn't show up there saying, oh, I'm a class five river guide, and then go out there and, you know, show your ass, as they say. It's better to undersell and overproduce than vice versa.
Yeah, that 100%. And everybody is like, oh, I guided here, which is always a little bit of an exaggeration. Like, maybe they didn't guide, but they, like, guided a hiking trip and didn't actually guide the river. So they said, I guided here. Or, yeah. And then you finally learn, like, okay, people overrepresent themselves in this world all the time. We're going on some tangents now, I feel like, instead of answering this topic. So
it's okay.
My advice for getting hired is go to a real guide school. Like, learn real things. Like, can you flip and reflip a boat quickly? Are you accurate with the throw bag? Do you truly understand boat spacing? Do you know how much pressure goes in a boat? Just all the things. Do you have those things down, or did you kind of learn it from some friends and you're like, I'll figure guiding. I'll just figure it out. Like, get a good education, go to a guide school, and then start small. Like, start on a class three river somewhere and get reps. For sure. Well, I think this is the end. I think we got to all of our questions.
Whew.
We did it pretty fast. Thanks for helping.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Do you have any parting thoughts or words or things you want to talk about before we shut this one down?
Not really. Stay safe. Have fun out there.
It's April 11th. It's that time of year. We're going to get rad out there. So yeah, it's boating season. Some reminders I have just before we shut down, go to Private Whitewater's YouTube page, follow him. He's putting some cool stuff out there. Cody's a great guy. He really could use some more followers. So please follow Cody at Private Whitewater. And Will, do you want to promote your shirts? You should, because they're cool.
Okay.
I should have worn mine. Man, I should have worn mine right now. What a dummy I am.
Yeah. Those are your words.
I know they are.
Yeah, I really like fleece t-shirts. And I started making some a couple of years ago and have pretty good product that I'm selling nowadays, exclusively marketed on Instagram, called Barking Dog Fleecewear. It's just like Barking Dog, the surf wave on the South Fork American. That's what it's named after. Great layer for a dry suit. I wear mine often.
Is there a website, or do they have to go to Instagram to find it?
It's a very awkward Instagram messaging process, just like me.
Wait, are you saying you're a very awkward Instagram messaging process?
Yes, I am a very awkward Instagram messaging person.
There's Private Whitewater. Yeah, Cody just got off the Illinois and is going to put up some cool stuff. Hopefully, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Me too.
It's going to be cool.
Heck yeah.
Well, thanks everybody for watching. Thanks for those of you that are members. We really appreciate the support. And the next show will probably be next Tuesday. We'll see what happens. Let me find the closing thing and we'll be done with this one.
Peace.